Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
Listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Fantasy Sports Today.
What is up? Fantasy Sports Today, Fantasy Sports Radio Network, alongside Matt Modica and the beast, Jake Seeley, and returning once again, the General, Ian Khan. I'm Greg Sussman. I'm not under the feet of an A. Dr. A, also Matt, will not be on the program today.
Yeah, Dr. A's been bad.
Yeah, we don't want him.
We kind of told him that.
Instead, we'll be joined by Virginia. Huge upgrade, in my opinion.
I agree.
So there you go. Virginia will join the program, talk some injuries with us coming up in a bit. Ian's sticking around for all 2 hours because he's a general. He says, I want to be here, I'm going to be here. And he's sticking around all afternoon. He'll do FST with us. He'll do the BFFs with us. It's going to be a great afternoon. Matt, we'll start with you. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. I'm doing better than my Mets, unfortunately. But, you know, it's May 10th. Everybody freaks out. Players aren't performing or guys that are crushing it. We still got a long ways to go, people.
Long way to go. I mean, it's amazing, Ian, that it was just 2 weeks ago. The Mets were in first place, best record in baseball other than the Red Sox, and the Yankees were battling at 500. You go now into the middle of May rather than the middle of April. Yankees are the best team in baseball, and the Mets should fire everybody.
Yeah, I don't know about firing everybody, but the Yankees are definitely the best team in baseball right now, which is exciting. I was actually at the game last night. But the Mets are struggling, but I like their Devin Mesoraco trade. Getting rid of Matt Harvey is an addition by subtraction, and I think that Mesoraco will bring something to the table.
There you go. Mesoraco, he likes it. Jake, you don't really like much of anything. How are you today?
No, and I don't like the fact that this game is on Facebook Live right now instead of on TV.
I agree with the beast on that one.
Well, to be fair, it's not the Mets, right? It's the Giants and the Phillies that are on Facebook Live. And to be honest with you, a lot of people don't have MLB
TV. I don't have
a
Facebook account. I don't want a Facebook account.
And there's more people
that, what about all the people that, you know, deactivated their Facebook account because of concerns?
There are more people that have Facebook than have MLB TV.
No, I'm not saying that. You know, I'm not saying people use it. I mean, for me, it's kind of freaky.
Matt, just do what I did. I got rid of Facebook like 5-6 years ago, but just create a fake account so you can sign up and watch baseball.
Apparently. I use my wife's account. That's how I do it. I just hack into hers. And
So you are basically Cambridge Analytica.
Pretty much.
That is you. All right. Fair enough. All right. Speaking of the Phillies and the Giants, that's actually where we wanted to start today. We have a lot going on. As I said, Virginia's going to join us from Inside Injuries, talk injuries. Coming up at 1:40-ish, it's the part of the program we've all been waiting for. It's our Julio Teheran update with Chris Venture and Jake Seeley, so look forward to that. It's going to be great. It's going to be really fun. But I wanted to start off the show with the Giants and the Phillies playing this afternoon about two players that, coming into the year, nobody wanted. Two players we'd written off, and even after the first week, given Gabe Kapler's ability or disability to not choose a lineup, we all said we wanted nothing to do with. It's different now. It's different when you look at the numbers, and it's different when you realize just how good Odubel Herrera and Michael Franco have been. You look at Odubel's numbers, he's batting 340. Like, he may not have the numbers that, just speed-wise and power-wise, that we thought we were getting just last year, but Matt, this is a guy that we all wrote off this year. Or I don't want to speak for you. This is a lot of people wrote off this year.
No, I mean, look, his draft price dropped drastically this year. I mean, pretty much in 15-teamers, he was going, you know, mid-teens. You know, he was going past, you know, where he should have went. I wasn't really going after him myself. The one thing, you know, the on-base percentage has been great. I mean, he's gotten on base. These multi-hit games that he's had, he's been very consistent in that. The one shocking thing is the one stolen base. So you think that's going to improve? Is he a 340 hitter? No, I don't think he's a 340 hitter. But, you know, he couldn't be a 300 hitter. I don't doubt that. But the one most thing I will say about Gabe Kapler and stuff, what changed, and I said this early on, self-preservation would do this for him. Aaron Nola goes 7-8 innings every night now. He's not getting taken out after 5 innings and 69 pitches. So there's a big difference. When your starting pitchers can go 7 innings, and a guy like Pivetta, who's been fantastic at home, been, you know, troublesome on the road, you know, pitching means a lot. So
pitching does mean a lot. And, you know, I'll throw this over at you. I look at Odubel Herrera's numbers, and I give him 340. The OBP currently sits at over 400. And we looked a little bit about this downstairs before the show. And the BABIP is at 379. His career BABIP is at like 360. So that's not crazy by any means. All the other advanced statistics are kind of in line. The major change that I see is the K percentage. The K per 9 is down significantly from 22% down to 15%. He's back walking the 9% that he was walking in 2016. It looks like whatever ailed him last year, he's kind of back in the good graces, doing something right this year.
Yeah, and he's also a guy who's sort of coming into his own. I mean, he was a Rule 5 draft pick a couple of years back, and there wasn't going to be that much time for him. He wasn't who knew what was going to happen, and they ended up showing up and being really valuable. He's going to have that dip down year, but there's always a time in anything where you get better at your job, and he's definitely getting better at his job. And I'm a Odubel Herrera fan, have been for a while, trying to get him in one of my leagues.
Jake, I know you don't do projections every week, obviously, but what kind of tier is Odubel Herrera on right now? Like, how real is this? Because as I described, I think it is, but is Odubel Herrera an outfielder three for whatever that's worth? Is this a guy that you're going to be able to count on day in and day out here?
Gregor Blanco just went deep first batter of the game.
Okay.
By the way.
Great.
Just so you know.
Thank you.
No, Odubel, look, I had him higher than most people. I'm not going to get caught up in the twos and the threes and the stuff like that,
because
it depends on the size of your league. So I'll just tell you, I'm going to say exactly the same thing I said before the season started. He's still a top 35 outfielder. He's now top 25 because that's where his potential lands. And you mentioned some of the things and the changes behind it. But as Ian said, too, he still come into his own. Don't forget, last year, he wasn't 100% healthy. And there's a good part of that could be a factor of having an off year altogether. I think he's more of what he was the year before that, which is what we're seeing. As you mentioned, he's getting back to that way. He's striking out even less than he ever did before, and you're seeing the kind of player he was. I think last year was just an unfortunate situation, whether he was pressing, whether the injury knocked him all year, as I said, whatever it may be. He is somebody that has home run power and can chip in steals and can hit for 300 average. So it's a top 25 outfielder. Potentially, if he keeps this up for the entire year, and like Matt said, he doesn't even have to hit 330. If he hits 300 and does this for the rest of the year, he'll end up being in the top 15.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right with that. And that's what made at least me fall in love with Odubel going into last year, because I'll be very transparent here. There were two guys I wanted on my team last year. One was Jose Ramirez, and one was Odubel Herrera, because I thought that what they did in 2016 was able to be replicated in 2017, if not get better. Jose Ramirez got better. Odubel obviously didn't. And maybe I was too quick to jump off ship, but with Gabe Kapler, I felt, honestly, that there's a lot of names in that outfield, and I thought Odubel would probably be the one left out. At least through the first 35 games, 21 runs scored, 21 RBI, those 5 home runs, 2 stolen bases. This is a guy that can do a little bit of everything.
Odubel Herrera, what would you think his average draft position? There were 34 main events in the NFBC. That's 15-team leagues. That's an overall prize. He was the 49th outfielder off the board.
Barely top 50.
What do you think his ADP was, his average ADP over there?
I was in the 13th round. So what does that equate to?
The 13th round would be 195.
Okay,
so,
sure.
Yeah, you're right about there. You've had
15 teamer.
He had basically a 200 ADP,
okay,
199.5. So, I mean, right there. And people had the opportunity to get him. That's like his teammate, Michael Franco, who's 25, won't be 26 until sometime in August. And look, he being that young, last year I think people put a little too much on him to make that breakout. It didn't happen. And then, look, he may, you know, things may turn south for him.
Absolutely.
But the things look good right now. The walk percent, you know, is only like 5.5-6%.
It's 9%, which is great.
The strikeout percentage
down
is
to
only
15.
So that's really, you know, he's making improvements there. We know he has the power. And, you know, the good thing is he's hit well these first 6 weeks. Scott Kingery, who I love and I think long term is going to be a really good player, has not. Like, we were worried. Like, is it going to be Franco? I mean, could Cesar Hernandez or someone else lose the playing time? Well, J.P. Crawford got hurt, too. So that kind of helps Kingery right now get a role. But that's what is important about these young players, especially a guy like Kingery, a guy like Fowler who just came up. You got to hit early. You got to do it. You know, you got to be involved. You got to, otherwise, you know, you're going to lose playing time.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. Let me go over to you, Ian, about Michael Franco now, because he was in a much similar position, in my opinion, and I think Matt really just described it well. Scott Kingery, once he signed that contract, he was going to play every day somewhere. And you had Nick Williams in the outfield as well, and they've kind of solidified what they're doing in the outfield with Nick Williams being the fourth outfielder. But until J.P. Crawford got hurt, Scott Kingery, whether it was third base, shortstop, or second base, was playing every day. And it wasn't going to be second base because Cesar Hernandez was fantastic. So it was most likely Michael Franco losing playing time. But J.P. Crawford gets hurt. Michael Franco starts playing every day. And now through 31 games, he's got 7 home runs. He's got 28 ribbies. He's batting .292. I understand the BABIP's a little bit high, but listen, last year it was very, very low, and he still hit the 24 home runs. I know the average wasn't where you want it to be, but I don't think anyone expects him to be a .290 hitter. If you can get to that 260, 270 range, which is reasonable, get the 25 home runs you always get, a ton of RBIs, and a much better lineup. Mikel Franco's, again, a much better player than where he was drafted.
Yeah, and Mikel Franco was coming. I mean, if you look back at the prospect list from 3-4 years ago, he was a top 40 prospect or top 30 prospect. He always had the big bat. The question was whether he was going to find his way into understanding the game and playing it the right way. And it seems as if, you know, Matt keeps saying it's early, and you're right. But at least through these first 6 weeks, maybe he's maturing into his position as a successful baseball player, which is then living up to his talent, which is exciting for him.
Absolutely. Jake, and I think people forget that Franco's only 25 years old. You look at all of this youth on Philly outside of Carlos Santana, obviously, and they're building this together. And Michael Franco, Ian just hit on it. He was a top prospect out of Cuba that we kind of waited on. We were excited to have come up. And we all wrote him off very, very quickly this spring. And probably silly. Probably stupidly, I mean, of us.
No, not of us. That was not me.
Well, okay. It wasn't Jake. But I'll make a point. I got him in our RotoWire Invitational that James Anderson created and runs. And it's a 20-team league. And a lot of really good prospect people. I'm not a prospect guy. I mean, I'll know the top guys to know and everything. But, I mean, I drafted Franco. And I wasn't like, oh, my God, I'm getting a great player. But I was like, look, he's 25. I need a third baseman here. So, you know, it wasn't like I was like, no, he's definitely going to have a bounce back here. I thought the possibility was there. I took him on some of my teams. My confidence level wasn't extremely high. But just to make that point, even people in the prospect world, I don't think we're so excited about Michael Franco. And even the guy that took him wasn't like oh, my God, I just stole. Like this pick was a steal.
100%. And I'm with you. And I go back to my league, which is my home league, which I try to use as almost the
everyman's.
The everyman's league, exactly. The perfect word for it. Your standard 12-team league, a league that a ton of our listeners are playing in, the just standard league. And one guy in week one, we only had 4 pickups for the week, and it was the extended week one because it started on a Thursday. They gave you the weekend plus another week. So his 4 pickups were done. And he basically said, listen, if anyone picks up Chris Owings, I will trade you Odubel Herrera or Miguel Franco, your choice for Chris Owings. And someone's like, all right, I'll do it for Odubel Herrera. And that was the mindset, Ian, that people were in. I mean, they were literally giving these guys away. Now, through May 10th, the dividends are really paying off for those that have stuck with these guys.
That's what makes the game kind of fun, too, though, because it's like you don't exactly know. You're not sure. You have ideas. You have, like you were saying earlier, these are the guys that you want on your team. If you believe in Odubel Herrera, he's batting third for that team. He's been batting third. He was going to be an everyday player. It was a little weird on opening day when he didn't play. It was like, all right, well, what are you going to do here?
Right.
But he was their most veteran presence. You know, Chris Owings, I mean, that's a bad trade. You know, it's better to have Herrera now.
I'll agree that's a bad trade. And I'm a guy that thinks if Chris Owings gets the at-bats this year, he could be like Chris Taylor last year. But still, that's not looking good.
No,
based on the playing time opportunity.
Jake, I only bring up the Phillies like this, and these two players in particularly, because we've talked a lot about the Braves on the show, of course, the Ozzie Albies and Ronald Acuna and your NCRT and whatnot, and how good they have been. They've been fantastic, and that's why they're in first place. But the Phillies are there too, right? The Phillies are half game back right now. And I feel like it's almost gone underlooked a bit. Like, this NL East, where the Mets sit three games back, they're in second to last place here. Like, that's what's crazy. Is not I'm not poo-pooing the Mets.
Formerly 12-2 Mets.
I'm not poo-pooing the Mets in any way. I'm just saying how good in recent weeks the Braves and the Phillies have been, and it's almost gone overlooked with how good the Phillies are.
Yeah, look, if you're a Mets fan, you're paying attention to this, because a couple of weeks ago, Matt knows this. I think I included you, Matt, but I know it was with Joe Pizzapia. And I said about it, I said, like, this team's going nowhere unless they make a move, because they have nobody after Syndergaard and DeGrom. And if nobody's paying attention to, as you just said, even a week and a half ago, Greg, the Braves were on their heels and the Phillies were right behind the Braves. And then you still had the Nationals that were just a game or two under 500. Like, just people were not paying attention to it because all the focus is because it's New York. Oh, my God, the Mets are at 11-1. Oh, my God, the Mets are 13 and whatever they are. So people just weren't paying attention. But you're 100% right. This is turning out to be arguably the toughest division because the Nationals are going to pick things up. I mean, you look at the Yankees and the Red Sox, but the rest of the division is a question mark. You look across baseball, this is probably going to be the toughest one for some time because the Phillies have the young players. The Braves have young players just coming out of their ears. But the fact is, to go back to the Herrera and the Franco and everything, is it's the same thing we say every single year. And it's kind of annoying to keep talking about, but I guess we got to keep doing it for everybody out there every single year. Stop overreacting to 2-3 weeks in April. That's what people do. They treat it like fantasy football. And then these type of things happen every single year. And they either drop somebody too soon, or they overpay for somebody that's just all of a sudden cooled off.
Yeah, and another important thing here is pitching is everything. The reason why I like the Braves a little more than the Phillies right now is the Braves have an abundance of young arms that, you know, Gohar is going to the bullpen right now. That was an argument I won with one of my partners last week. I won't name him. But Soroka was going to stay. I know James is a huge Soroka guy.
Yeah.
And they got Newcomb, who's, if this control is real, if he can keep this control contained, this is a breakout guy. This is a breakout guy right here, right now. And so we'll see what the Phillies can do. Can these starters sustain?
We'll take the break here. When we come back, we'll be joined by Virginia Zakis from Inside Injuries. Whole list of players to talk about with her. I'm excited about it. No idea. No idea what's going on. And we'll do that. It'll be Ian. It'll be Matt. It'll be Jake the Beast. Silly. And me, Greg Sussman. Keep hanging out with us here on FST.
Friends, if you want to win at fantasy sports, wouldn't you listen to people who have already won at fantasy sports? I'm here to tell you about DailyRoto.com. Don't be intimidated by the DraftKings and FanDuel sharks, even the fantasy draft sharks. The guys at DailyRoto.com have not only won $1 million amongst one of the writers, but they've created three others. That's four people who have won millionaire contests from this content alone. Don't be fooled by screenshots talking about $25,000 winners from other places. Go to DailyRoto.com, where they have a proven track record of creating millionaires. DailyRoto.com. Tell them Greg Sussman sent you.
FST on FNTSY. We'll get to Virginia in just 1 second. I want to remind you, it's Dollar Deal Month over at DailyRoto.com. You spend $1 with a promo code, $1, and you get Daily Roto's premium products for $1. $1. It's $1. It's Dollar Deal Month, DailyRoto.com. Check it out. All the services you could possibly ask for from the daily perspective, it's over there at DailyRoto.com. $1 is a promo code.
Can I quote one of my favorite lines from the original RoboCop? I'd buy that for a dollar.
There you go. See, I just want you to know how happy that made Matt.
It's amazing how that line.
Set his line, set back, looked around, feeling great. That's awesome. Well, someone whose advice should cost a lot more than $1. She joins us the program right now. It's Virginia Zakis from InsideInjuries.com. What's going on, Virginia?
Hey guys, how's it going?
Oh, it's going fantastic. And we are even more fantastic to have you back because after Dr. A last week, we needed you back.
Good to be back.
Yeah, we sincerely appreciate it. We were just talking about it during the break. And out of nowhere, Trevor Cahill had this elbow impingement, whatever that means. Hopefully you can help us. And I don't know where it came from. I don't know why. I don't know what it means. All I want to know is, when is he coming back?
So it sounds like Trevor Cahill is dealing with elbow impingement, which in this case likely means that there's some compression of the ulnar nerve, which is the funny bone. It can cause aching in the elbow, which then leads the numbness and tingling in the hands and fingers, typically like the ring finger mainly affected. Right now we're showing the optimal recovery. So it's not too serious, but it is the kind of thing that can come back up again down the road even when he is clear to return.
Well, let's stick with the pitching here.
Let's do it.
And, you know, the king of the hill for the last few years. But, you know, everybody had a little, was a little nervous this year. I faded him. And at the very end, I got him on two of my biggest teams. Clayton Kershaw. This biceps injury, is this something we should be really be concerned about? Or is this possibly only a short-term injury?
This is one of those that we hope is a short-term injury. They said his MRI was pretty clean. Means they found some tendonitis. Most likely everything structurally was okay, which is a good sign for his long-term outlook for this. But what's concerning is that this is the fourth time on the DL in the past 5 years, so he just keeps having injury issues. The past has been possible that he changed his mechanics a little bit, put extra stress on his throwing arm. So he needs to spend some time to really figure out what's causing his arm issues and make sure that he's doing whatever he can to keep his back in health.
Virginia, excuse me. We're talking Virginia Zach is insideinjuries.com. Hey, Frank, do me a favor. Let's reset with Virginia. We're having some audio problems there. We'll call her back in a minute, hopefully get that audio figured out. Talk about Trevor Cahill there, and hopefully trying to piece this together, Ian, because Trevor Cahill has been really good, and I was really mad at myself. I said every day on the show that I picked up Trevor Cahill instead of Walker Buehler before Buehler's first start, and it makes me feel terrible about myself.
No, don't feel bad about yourself. It's understandable.
Yeah, it's
understandable. I did tell you to take Walker Buehler.
You did.
And actually, I...
But you also told me to bench Zach Eflin.
I did tell you.
Did you say to pick up Zach Eflin?
No. I picked up Zach Eflin.
Well, that's the guy who I wanted to talk about on the Phillies was Zach Eflin, because I was watching him pitch the other night, and it was a remarkable experience of excellence.
Beyond. I mean, I had him, and I was excited to start him.
You had to start him, no doubt. Start. It was a guarantee. You're going to start him, right?
Well, right.
He got shamed on the air.
By Matt, by Nando, by Jake, by Frank, by Mike, and by the DailyRoto.com $1 a month projections, where the top five hitters were all facing Zach Eflin. So I'm just like, all right, you got me.
I did send a text saying how sorry.
You
I
did.
Was.
Jake did. Frank did. I got a text apologizing.
Well, that's good.
But it's not making me feel as good.
Because I gotta tell you, I really like that Zach Eflin kid.
Now going forward,
I mean, look, I had to go do some research. I was like, geez, man, I was watching him pitch. I was watching him throw. I was like, this kid is really good. And then I went back and I saw that he was the 33rd pick in the draft back in 2012, which sort of indicates that like this arm was coming. But if you look at the stats from last year and from from his prior starts before this season, he had a 5.57 ERA, I think, or something like that, mm-hmm. with no indication of what was coming. Though I like me some Zach Eflin now.
Oh, I'm going to have to look into this. I hit on the watch list for Zach Eflin as I thought about you. So now, Nick Pivetta became available in one of my leagues.
Sure. Right?
Somebody dropped him.
Yeah.
I don't think I have enough money to really compete for what he's going to go for. But Zach Eflin, I haven't done the deep dive on him. Is there something you see in maybe the pitch mix? Like, where's these strikeouts coming from?
It looked like the velocity, there was movement on the pitch. I just liked what I was seeing. The guy. And then what kind of cinched it for me was, and then I started looking and putting bids down just for the weekend ahead, was I just looked at his draft status. Like, where did he come from and when did he come from? And I think he was drafted out of high school. So seeing a high school kid then in his early 20s who's finally made it to the show, it's like, okay, here is the hope for the future, and here the hope is realized.
All right, with that, with Zach Eflin and praying that the hope is realized, I'm with you, man. We bring back Virginia Zach. Virginia, sorry about that.
No worries.
All right, we try to hop right back in. Matt, we'll throw it to you, see if there's a play.
Yeah, we're going to keep on this pitching theme here.
Do it.
I got to make an interesting decision. I have Johnny Cueto in my main event team that's doing very well. I kind of waited on pitching. I took Cole as my ace. Cueto as my number two.
Oh,
what do I do here, Virginia? It's 6 weeks. I'm hearing Dr. James Andrews is saying. So does that mean like 2 months, possibly somewhere into 2.5, 3 months?
Yeah, I don't see Cueto coming back before the All-Star break. Right now they're saying he's going to focus on rest and rehab for around 6 to 8 weeks. that means that hopefully everything goes well. That's just elbow problems. And then you can really start to ramp up your program. So realistically, even if it goes well, we're probably looking close to 3 months before he's back in the rotation. But there is still a very high risk here that he could need surgery, likely Tommy John's. Rest and rehab some work, but not always. We probably won't know about 3 or 4 weeks.
That's obviously not the result you're hoping for. Right?
No, but it's kind of what I expect.
Well, I actually, to add in on this Johnny Cueto question from a Dynasty League perspective, I was very happy to see that he didn't have Tommy, he's not necessarily going to have Tommy John surgery, because that would almost bottom out his value, take him down to like 30 cents on the dollar, if that, because of his 32-year-old age. Is this rest and rehab something that tends to work, or are we just sort of in a Corey Seager situation where we're pushing it down the line and we'll eventually going to have that surgery anyway?
It's really tough to say here. We don't really, when they say it's a sprain, it likes to mean there's like a very minor tear of the ligament. If it's really small, then rest and rehab should work. If it's more serious of a tear, then probably we'll just cutting it off a little bit. Without seeing his MRI, it's hard to say.
Okay.
All right. So there you go. That's the deal. That's the deal with Johnny Cueto and how long he could be out for. And in a league that we are in together, I don't have a catcher this week because Yadier Molina really, really hurt himself. And he's going to be out for like...
That's our trade, by the way.
That's our. You're going to give me a catcher.
I'm going to give you Carson Kelly.
I can't wait to hear it. You're going to be one of Carson Kelly. I don't have Yadier Molina. When am I going to have him back, Virginia?
So they're saying he's going to be out at least 4 weeks after surgery. We're showing a longer optimal recovery time of 7 weeks. So he could be looking at around 2 months out.
And the price for Carson Kelly just went.
That was not the report we wanted, Virginia.
Let's go to the outfield. An outfielder who got called up, hit a couple of homers, got injured, and was trying to make a comeback. There was some dizziness still, but I hear he's on his way back. Mac Williamson.
Yeah, so he was supposed to go visit a specialist again this weekend to get everything checked out. We don't really know yet how that went. And as we've already seen with him, concussions are incredibly unpredictable. So seems like he's finally on the right track and getting closer to a return, but he's not there yet. He's not ready for a reassignment or anything like that. So in this case, it's hard to say, but our outfit is showing that by late next week, probably the soonest he'll be ready to return.
All right, there you go. That was Mac Williamson. Virginia, we're going to cut it off here. We're having some major audio issues today. I apologize. Is there anybody else that we needed to get to that you're going to blow our minds with before we wrap it up?
Getting excited about a Justin Turner return.
Yeah, yes! All right. Let's talk about Justin Turner before you go. Let's go.
Please.
We're showing an 8-week optimal recovery time, which puts his healthy to return date at the beginning of next week. Should be ready to go.
All right, how about that? Now, when he comes back, I know I just said we have to let Virginia go, but now I'm all in on this Justin Turner thing. Now, when Justin Turner comes back, the problem is when these guys have these wrist injuries that the power doesn't come back with them. Like, they're healthy, and they're ready to go, and it looks like Justin Turner will play rehab games this weekend and then be back pretty much exactly when Virginia is describing. But will the power in his bat be all the way back as well? Like, we have seen guys in the past, I always go back to Mark Teixeira, come back and not show the power. Like, Delino DeShields, you know, isn't really a power hitter. He had a wrist injury or ham bone injury earlier this year. He has 2 home runs. I don't know. That's a great example. But wrists have always been related to power struggles from hitters returning from that injury. Will his power stroke be there when he returns next week?
Probably not. It's probably going to take him maybe between 2 and 4 weeks. The good news is it was a non-displaced fracture and he didn't have surgery. So that should help him get his power back a little quicker than a guy like Freddie Freeman last year.
All right, so it sounds like, just like a lot of rest for Justin Turner is what ultimately made this wrist heal. All right, one more question, Virginia. I'm sorry. I just have one more question. I'm trying to find out what this fever is from Yu Darvish. Like, I'm trying to understand it because I don't know what it is. I know Jake looked it up.
Hopefully it's not yellow fever.
It's between his ears.
Ooh.
That's what I think it is.
Well, you're not the doctor. We have that one.
All right. Yeah. She
Virginia, what is this fever that Yu Darvish has?
We really don't know.
It's between his ears.
I can you know.
Ian's probably played a doctor before, too, so.
No, I never have played a doctor. I've never played a doctor. No, not yet. But no, I think it's between, I think they're just giving him a mental rest.
Virginia?
That's very possible.
And with that, we're going to say goodbye to Virginia Zakas from Inside Injuries. Virginia, we hope to get the sound and everything fixed for next week. But it's been awesome as always. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank y'all.
That was great.
And I tell you, if I was a casting director, I would have hired him as a doctor.
That was it. That was it.
Sold.
Yeah. That's all right.
You don't want to be a doctor.
No, I'll play. I'm sure there'll be a moment where I'll play a doctor on TV. I don't know. I think it's just whatever comes up next, it'll be just fine and great.
I'd want the role where it's like, hand me the, what do you call it? You got to like bring somebody back to life.
It doesn't itch.
It doesn't do it for you.
Doesn't it do much? No, not really.
What if you had like
what if you were the bad doctor, right? Like bad scripts and stuff for people?
Yeah, that'd be a little bit more interesting.
What if you were just popping Vicodins like House?
That'd be interesting, too. That'd be more interesting. Street pharmacist. Yeah, that's right.
Jake Seeley, welcome back, sir. What do you think of you, Darvish? Do you believe it's real?
Dude, how did she miss the joke? He has a fever for more cowbell. I'll hang up on this damn show. That's one of the best skits ever of SNL.
SNL was great. Yeah, you my friend, and know Will Ferrell.
Was I trying to be?
Oh man, so are you buying it? Are you buying it, Jake? For real? Do you think it's just something in his head?
Oh, for real, you guys can go screw.
Jake, why are you doing that?
I got nothing.
All right.
I think it's a little bit of both. I think that Sunday night game where they went 14 innings had a lot to do with it, where they wanted to make sure they had like another pitcher there. So
I think he was struggling, and I think they don't know why. I think they're giving him. It's like, you know, when your kids are a little, you give them a little quiet break in the corner and just relax, just take some breaths, you Darvish, because you got to be better than what you're doing right now, because what you're doing right now is not what we're paying for. So go home, take some naps, relax for a little bit, come back and be you Darvish.
The scary part with the you Darvish thing is, I figured this year and probably next year he'd still be a good pitcher, you know, above average, and at least get you know, strikeouts, even if it was a 3.80, even close to 4 ERA. But they gave him, what, 6 years? That's a long time.
But they didn't give him that much money. I mean, comparable to,
you're right,
to his value. I mean, he will, even if he performs like a number two pitcher, it's still a decent deal. He just has to come back. Like, yeah, he has to find that.
If he's like a 4 or 5, I mean, you're right about that. But when you start taking his money and then you add that to Jason Hayward's money, I mean, the bad contracts start adding up. And I know the Ricketts have tons of money, and Wrigley expanded. They redid the park. They've done a great job with that. But, you know, at some point, bad contracts do catch up to you.
For sure.
Of course. And luckily, when you have the deep pockets, it's easier to come back from that. We've seen that, of course, obviously with the Yankees, who were able to remake their farm system very, very quickly after being bogged down for years with bad contracts. But it does, in fact, catch up to you. Jake, I want to throw this out there because these guys were talking about it when you were gone for a moment, and that was Zach Eflin. I know we talked a lot about him on the Monday edition of the show, but Ian's buying in. Ian's kind of believing it.
I'm putting a dollar down. I am. I'm putting a dollar down, throwing him on my bench, see if he keeps going. I mean, depending on the size of the league, in a 12-team league, I may not start him, but yes.
Jake, do you think that's possible?
I think what's possible? It wasn't a question. What was the question?
That Zach Eflin can continue what he's doing.
No, I don't. We talked about this the other day. He doesn't have to strike out. So if you want to put him on your bench, that's fine. But that's what he's saying. Throw a dollar on him. Put him on your bench. Okay, play him his matchups. But there's been no signal of his strikeouts for his entire minor league career where you can get excited about it. I don't believe.
For the record, if I had $1, I'd use it for daily.
I'll use it for DailyRoto.com as well. Dollar deal month over at Daily Roto. It's $1. O-N-E-D-O-O-D-O-L-L-A-R. Not dough. That doesn't make any sense. Jake, we got an update here from San Francisco. Anything else going on? Or Philly, rather?
Oh, no. I actually turned that off because that annoys you guys.
Oh, we appreciate that. We missed an Alan Hansen homer.
Did he? Oh, that is
all right.
I just traded for him in our league.
He's great.
Yeah, just traded for him.
We picked him in our other league that we all share together. He's great. He let off the other day. It's awesome.
We missed that. Me and in the league I'm in with Vlad Sedler, we desperately needed steals, and We missed out by $2.
How good can Alan Hansen be this year, IndyCon?
Alan Hansen could be as good as he could be a top. He could be a number three outfielder, low number three, high number four outfielder. I love me some Alan Hansen possibilities. We talked about this last week.
Would you say he could be this year's Whit Merrifield?
I'm sorry?
Could he be this year's Whit?
Wow, that would be
that's interesting.
That would be even more than that. That would be more than I would expect. But yeah, I mean, it's possible that he could be in that conversation. I love his dual eligibility, second base, outfield, very valuable, especially in our 15 team league. And we James and I grabbed him in the 20 team.
Let's throw this out there to you, Jake. Can Alan Hansen be this year's Whit Merrifield? I think that's right. The question.
I think that's a little too much to ask for him.
Okay,
it's like Ian said, it'd be unbelievable if he turned into that. I think at best you're hoping for like 10 and 15 the rest of the way added to what he already has, which would be still valuable.
Very.
He should have been going out on Cowboys, by the way.
So you say it's bad job by Mike Floria?
Yes.
All right. Bad job by Mike Floria there. No blue oyster cult. All right, take a break here. Chris Venture joins the program next.
To tell you that there was a professional football league where you, the fan, got to draft the team and call the plays. Is that something you might be interested in? The Fan Control Football League is bringing managerial control to the fans. Visit fcfl.io to learn more.
Back with you, Fantasy Sports Today, on the Fantasy Sports Network. The all-in beast, Jake Seeley, is here. Matty Moe, Matt Modica. The General, Ian Khan. I'm going to keep going with that.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, that's how it goes.
You know, unless you become a doctor, and we'll go to that doctor. You know?
Nah, I think the general's going to stick.
The general's going to stick.
It pretty much is, yeah. That's what happens.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's pretty much it.
The general, Ian Khan, is up here, and we are now joined by the newest member, not newest member, but he's the latest member to join the program today.
Correct.
In a barrage of guests that we have. It's the analyst, Chris Venture. What's up, Chris?
What's going on, guys? How you doing?
We're doing well. Move this
Glad
cord.
Glad to be on.
Move this cord behind you, man.
All right, man.
I want to thank Chris for the half a sandwich you gave me today.
Yes.
It was delicious.
I was so upset. It looked like a great sandwich. And the second I walked back with my lunch, he's like, oh, you want this? I'm like, what?
Yeah, I know. I just, you know, I felt generous today and I just lost my earpiece. But can you hear me now?
Yeah, we hear you fine.
All right. So, yeah, I lost. I had a sandwich. It was too spicy. Chipotle mayo. And usually I like Chipotle mayo, but they made it very spicy. So I gave it to Matt Modica, you know, he's my paisan. So that's what I did.
I get it. I had a great Zeus bowl today. Strongly recommend the Zeus bowl from the Greek place next door.
Yeah?
If you're hungry. Yeah, it's a good bowl.
I went across the street to the Good Grains and got the salad there.
How was it?
It was good.
All right.
It was solid.
Okay.
So the grains were good.
The grains were good.
They were good grains.
As was the lamb that I had in my Zeus bowl. As was the Chipotle mayo sandwich, according to Matt Modica.
It wasn't too spicy.
It was just right. So we're all happy today. And someone's extra happy. And that's why we brought him upstairs. Usually the video producer for this program. It's Chris Venture. Chris, what makes you so extra happy today?
So, you know, me and Jake for a while have had having this thing over Julio Teheran and Jake Arrieta as well.
Right.
And, you know, Jake at one point said Jake Arrieta is trash. And he also said Julio Teheran isn't, you know, like fantasy relevant, really.
Sure.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And it looks like lately he's really been fantasy relevant. He's been consistent. He's been solid. He's been throwing quality, you know, games every start pretty much besides a couple so far this year. And I think that it's time to take notice of that. I think he should be on every fantasy roster, 12 teams and higher.
Jake, agreed? Your thoughts?
I'm done doing this. Let's just continue to change the argument. I'm going to make the same point I've made from day one. First of all, the Arrieta thing was a trash joke. You came on. We talked about it. I said he deserved to be in 12-team leagues. I said he deserved to be in 10-team leagues. He just wasn't what he was before. When it comes to Julio Teheran, I still say exactly what he is. He's a matchup play. He's a matchup play. Matt tweeted it out. The fact that he's been terrible on the road and great at home or vice versa, I don't remember at this point because I don't care anymore. We're making the same argument over and over and over again. He just keep trying to change words and backtrack. I'm done doing this. Teheran is a matchup play, end of story.
But it's not the same argument over and over because now more days go by and better starts keep coming about. How many good starts are we going to have to see?
2 years ago, he was a matchup play in one of his best seasons. Go look at it. Go look at 2 years ago where he was abysmal in August, and I think it was July or August and September, and terrific in May and June. He's a matchup play. He always will be.
Right. I understand what you're saying, but he's also only 27 years old, I think, just entering his prime years.
Yeah, so everything's going to change over his entire career that he's a matchup play.
Well, I think that, and listen, I know you know a lot more than me. You're the ranking king. You're, you know, you've done a lot of research over the years, and you know, you got a much bigger following than I do.
Keep fighting. Don't bend it.
No. I want to give him a little respect, of course, but I think one thing I really do know about baseball is that, because I've played baseball all my life, is that, like Ian says, there's some people that come on later. They figure it out later. You know, it takes them a while to come to own. Some come up right away and they're doing great. Like Vlad Guerrero Jr. is hitting 300 or 400 in the minors right now. He's ready to come to the Major League Baseball at 19, basically. But, you know, maybe it's taking a little longer for Julio to become this 200-inning, you know, 8 Ks per 9 innings type pitcher with a 3.5 to 3 ERA. Maybe it's taking a little time. He's only 27. It's not like he's at the end of his career. He's just starting his career. He's at the beginning of his career, kind of.
Well,
he's just
not
entering his prime years.
He's got like 6 years to his career, and he is that guy. I will give you one thing. He is that guy. He is a mid-3 ERA. He is an 8K per 9 guy, but he's also a matchup pitcher. That's an SP5. He's not even inside. Even with this run, he's still not even inside the top 40 starters right now.
Yeah, the one argument that lost me here was Teron's had like a couple of seasons where he's pitched like 3.2 ERAs.
Mm-hmm.
And he usually pitches at least 180 innings for the most part. So
he's quality in that sense.
The problem with Julio Teron for me going forward is I can't start him at home. I have no faith at home. On the road, he's been fantastic. That's my issue. And for me, that's what scares me. If I can't start a guy, it's tough to have matchup guys in your
also life. Look at who he's faced this year. He's faced mainly the NL East. Let's talk about you're definitely not starting him against Colorado home, because as you just said, Matt, and you're not starting him in Colorado. You're not going to start him against anybody like the Dodgers lineup or the Cardinals lineup or anything like that. He's a matchup play. I've never said he wasn't a good matchup play, but that's all he is. He's a matchup play. You want to avoid the scary matchups.
I also think one quick thing. The last 2 years with SunTrust Park, it's been abysmal for him. Lefties have always been a problem, and left-handed power just plays in that park. But he's been a good pitcher throughout the pandemic. Look, he's like a young Cueto or something like that, where he overplays his peripherals. He overshoots his skis, however you want to do it. But I mean, he has put up some really nice seasons.
Right, and don't forget, he was a highly touted guy when he was first coming up. He didn't really pan out to be the guy he was going to be, but he's still a quality fantasy player. I think you can use him for an entire season. He shouldn't be dropped. He shouldn't be in the free agent pool, anything like that. I mean, you know that there's a lot of garbage out there as well. Like, that's what I'm trying to say. When we first talked about this before the season with Greg and everybody, like, you were saying that you don't think he's really fantasy relevant. Like, he's not even an SP5.
I never said that. I said he was a matchup play from day one.
Well, I'm glad you're admitting it now.
I'm
not admitting anything now. Don't try to turn around. Don't try to change words and change your argument and then say, I'm turning things around.
Let me throw this out at everybody at this table. Julio Teheran.
Yes.
Would you rather own him than, let's say, Domingo Germán? Who would you rather have, Ian?
I'd take Teheran over Germán.
Okay.
But Julio Teheran, it's like a bad ex-girlfriend, man, for me. I've got some real PTSD about that dude. And even in our 15-team league, I dropped him about 3 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, I dropped him to pick up Caleb Smith, who is my new favorite pitcher. But but then he went for $22 on this past Sunday, and I got him in a trade in another league. But Teheran it's frustrating as hell because you don't know what you're going to get out of the guy. And however, I agree with you to a certain extent that he could at some point turn this around and become a viable fantasy player. But I have to agree that right now he's not somebody that I trust.
Yeah. Well, how many guys, starting pitchers-wise, do you really trust at this point anyway besides the obvious, right? Like besides the top 25, 30 guys that you're going to pitch for one start no matter who they're playing against. Everybody's pretty much a matchup player for that anyway, because you got to decide, all right, who are they playing? This guy could get shelled at any moment. He could go get you 5 points or he could get you 20 points. It, like, you know, anybody after the top 30 is pretty much like that anyway.
I'll venture here. There really was like a top 20 this year. And then that 20 to like 30 or 36, if you want to use like three starters in a 12-team league to branch out, it was like there was a solid top 20, and then that 21 to 36 was you could put 21 at 33, and it would still, like, I mean, that's how close it's been with a lot of these guys. And that's how it's proven to be to pretty much to this point forward. So,
and then 36 to 85 is that next grouping that you could kind of, depending on where you wanted to put Lance Lynn and where you wanted to put.
I thought the other question was good.
Well, I'm going to get to all of them, but I wanted to get your thoughts. You said Teron. I know you said Teron Ventura. Mm-hmm. Matt?
I'm going to take Teron because I don't know what Herman's going to be. Okay. I really don't.
Jake?
It really kind of depends. If you can, if you have a team where you can sit around and play matchups and you have that kind of flexibility, then Teron's valuable. But if you have plenty of pitchers on your team and you're looking for somebody who could be a difference maker, I would take the dice roll on Herman because maybe he can turn into an SP2 for your team, whereas Teron is what he is. He's a matchup play. But I go deeper than that. You know, you throw out the question of, like, how many guys do you trust? Well, I mean, I'm looking at guys that are still ranked behind us today because of fewer starts or maybe a slow start behind them. But he's in the conversation with Skaggs is right behind him. Talk about those type of pitchers. John Lester had a terrible start, and he's starting to get better again. I mean, to fact the people that are behind him to say in that conversation, there are people I would still trust more. I'll roll out Lester every single start despite the bad start over playing matchups with somebody like Theron.
I understand that. And like you said, the question also has to do with, like, what type of league you're playing in, too. I think if you're in a regular redraft league, I think Teron is more valuable because you want somebody that's going to, you know, pitch a lot of innings for you as well. You don't want somebody that might have an innings cap or, you know, you don't know how long he could last. You don't know what his stamina is like. You don't know if he could reach 200 innings. Also depends on the league you play in. Is it points? Is it categories? Is it head-to-head? Like, I play in head-to-head points leagues only. So for me, I want a guy that's consistent, and I want a guy that's going to, you know, like, I could plug in for the week for two starts that's going to give me some quality pitching. Like, I don't know if I want too many young people on my roster, because if I have too much young pitching, at some point they're all going to fold or be sent down because, you know, they have an innings cap or something like that. Then what? You know what I mean? Then I'm in trouble. I'd rather have a guy that's going to pitch the whole season as well.
And I get that.
Does that make sense?
Yes, of course. And with that, I want to sign off of YouTube, all digital properties. We'll continue live on TV. We'll continue live on the radio. We'll go up to the top of the hour. BFFs, Ian Connell, stick around for that. Now, let me continue on with this. Mm-hmm. Gentlemen, would you rather have the rest of the way Julio Teheran or Tyler Chatwood? Matt.
I mean, personally, I need Chatwood, but I think it's... If I could play the matchups, it would be Teron. I think Teron is a better pitcher than Chatwood, but I might go with Chatwood. Just, I mean, I think right now I'm too biased on that one.
Okay, Ian?
Teron.
Pretty confidently.
Yes.
Jake?
They're the same to me.
Same to you. Matchup. They're both matchup plays, depending on who has a better matchup, all right? Ventura?
Teron.
Teron, okay. Last one. Would you rather have Julio Teheran or Jay Happ? Matt, I'll once again start with you.
Oh, it's Jay Happ's hands down.
Jay Happ easily for you.
That's Jay Happ, but it's not as easy for me.
Why?
Well, Jay Happ because he's pretty damn good and he's proving himself quite well. I have a little bit of Teron is part of my fantasy baseball world, and I was happy to see what he did the other night.
You know, I'm not a Teron hater.
No, neither
am
I.
I'm not a hater.
No.
But they're just, at home, he's just been so bad.
And Happ, look, I still, about Happ, it's still this division. Still he's got to come to New York. Still he's got to come to Boston.
Look, he's not going
to
be striking out 12 per nine. But what he's done the last 3 years.
No, but he's got 3.7 ERA or lower for the last 4 years.
Yeah, no.
And he was a great prospect. He was traded back in the Roy Halladay days for Roy Halladay in a deal. I mean, you know, he has the pedigree as well, and he's coming into his own. But, you know, I still, that division scares me.
I mean, Happ getting traded to Pittsburgh was the best thing that ever happened to his career. In the last, going into this year, he was one of 14 pitchers to have a 3.50 ERA, like 500 innings, almost a strikeout per inning, and a 2.7 or below walks per nine. So that's pretty good. Is he a 12 strikeout pitcher? No. It will somehow come down, but he's still good. And a good chance he gets traded at some point this year if the Blue Jays aren't in contention.
Yeah.
Right.
Ventura? I mean, I think that's like a toss-up.
Okay.
But
that one's close for you. Mr. Teheran over there, that one's close.
It's close. I mean, I agree in some points that, like, both these guys, I feel like, you know, you're not going to start them in certain instances. But Who has the more potential for growth in the future? I think it's Teron easily.
Yeah, but you're playing for this year. You're playing for this year.
Even down the line this year, I'm saying. Even at the end of this year, I'm saying. I think maybe Terahan has still has potential growth, whereas Hap's 34, 35 years old.
But how much growth is... And he's setting career highs.
Right, this might be his cap, though, is what I'm saying.
I don't care if it's his cap for...
His cap is a 20, top 25
I also worry
pitcher.
About him with injury. He's had a...
Why?
He pitches 100. He pitches pretty much the same amount of innings as Julio Teheran.
Every year? In his career?
Over the last, like, 3 years, I would say he probably has at least the same, if not more, innings than Julio Teheran.
Jake, let me give you a shot. Chime in here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no,
I don't need
you're not Jake.
It's not even close. Not even close. It's Jay Happen. It's not even.
Last year, you pitched 145 innings.
Okay. And how many has Julio Teheran pitched over the last 3 years? Give me the total.
If you're going to do the last 3 years,
that's what I said. Over the last 3 years.
Not including this year. He had 145 innings Happ last year, 195 2016. 2015, he had 172.
Okay, and what did Julio Teheran have those 3 years?
I'm going to need a second.
It was 1 year where Teheran had like 109 strikeouts.
I got it
for
you.
That was tough.
So in those same 3 years of 2017, 16, 15, 2017, 188. 2016, 188.
200.
2015, 200. Yeah.
Higher chance of going deeper.
Near the... I don't think the ERA.
And higher chance of getting hammered because two of those seasons.
Higher chance of getting
hammered. Two of those seasons, he had an ERA over four.
True. What was Jay Happ's ERA during those years, Jake? Ventura, sorry.
3.37 or lower every single year.
His ERAs were 3.5, 3.18, and 3.6. But.
That's pretty damn good, especially being in the American League.
But only that 1 year was bad for, that bad for Teheran. Usually his ERA is in the low threes.
It was 2015 and 17. It was over a 4 ERA with an over 1.3 whip.
It was 4.04. 2015, 4.04. But 2016 was 3.21.
Look,
the whole year.
One out of 3 years.
You're very brave for putting that earpiece on without even doing a wipe on the apple.
That was bad.
That was brave. But Hap over Teheran.
Hap over Teheran.
I like that one, though. That was a good one.
That was a close one.
That was a close one for me.
You still.
I like guys that go deep into the season.
Well, also you're coming from a, but you're also coming from a, you're also playing points, so you're getting points for innings pitched,
right?
And Teheran throwing up 200 innings, I can see how that has more value than in a roto league where you're not getting that same value for the extra innings,
right?
Yeah, but you know, Ian, you know, it's the same thing that Matt and I say all the time: is you can find pitchers in August and September where if you're getting 160 amazing innings to that point, you find somebody else to close it out. It's better than somebody who's going to give you 200 subpar in it.
Dude, look at my free agent pool and tell me if you can find anybody. It's absolutely terrible. I had to pay for Kyle Freeland. I had to pay $9 for Kyle Freeland.
There will be people there in August and September. There are every
year. Well, there's people. That's one thing. Like,
I don't trust
pitching,
them, though.
But with pitching, look at this last week. There were four guys in, you know, pretty much 12 and 15-team formats. There was the Soroka, Romero, Herman, and somebody else I'm missing.
Herman, yeah. Was it Domingo Herman? Did you ask me about?
Yeah.
Was it Teheran or Domingo Herman?
Yes.
Oh, my God. I was thinking German Marquez.
Oh, no.
That's who I was thinking.
It was Domingo Herman.
Oh, that's a very different. So hold on.
So what are you
going
to do?
Oh, daggone, man. Wow. I really thought that. I was thinking German Herman Marquez. Wow. I'm going to go with Domingo Herman, actually. I really am, because he does have some real upside in based on what he was doing and what I saw the other day.
We all love upside.
We do all love upside.
Upside is...
The upside continues to be in con, by the way, the BFFs. I want to thank the Beast. I want to thank Virginia Zakis. I want to thank everybody downstairs for all their help. Of course, Matt Modica. And then we go over to the analyst, who always does a fantastic job for us downstairs. Thanks for coming up and helping us out. Take a break. See you tomorrow, everybody, here on FSD.